Welcome to Parents Perspective. Alice was on the phone with her sister, planning for her niece and nephew's visit. "Anything special I should have in the house for them to eat?" Alice asked. "Well," her sister began, "Matthew will only eat French fries and hamburgers with ketchup on them. And Julia only likes tuna and sometimes egg salad. But they will both drink apple juice," she added brightly. From a parent's perspective, how should we handle a picky eater? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today, our guest is a nutrition expert who can help us sort out the problems associated with young children who are picky eaters. Kelly Dorfman is a nutritional consultant who specializes in children's issues. She has three children of her own, a 14-year-old son, and 10 and 8-year-old daughters. We're so glad you could join us, Kelly.
Thank you for having me.
What causes children to be picky eaters?
I think there are three main causes. There are biochemical reasons, sensory issues, and psychological issues. I think most of us are familiar with the psychological issues or the typical power struggles you can get into with your children. You know, you need to eat your vegetable. I'm not going to eat my vegetables. You can't make me eat my vegetables. Then there'll be no dessert. All of us have gotten into those struggles at one time or another. But I think many parents are less familiar with the biochemical or sensory issues that can cause picky eating. Poor digestion can make a child not interested in food. Malnutrition causes altered taste and makes kids not as interested in eating. And we have a whole industry of junk food that's out there trying to seduce them into foods that have very high flavors that you wouldn't naturally find. So, for example, a strawberry artificially flavored gummy something something tastes much more like strawberries than real strawberries do. It's a much more intense flavor. And kids can get hooked on that. And so that can be a real issue in terms of poor eating. And then finally, there is the sensory issues, which is misread data or immature nervous systems that sometimes give kids confusing messages about food that we as adults may not understand. So, for example, I have children in my practice who can walk into a room and see new foods on the table and scream, just hysterically. They just start screaming, take it away. I don't want to look at it. Or I had a child once who threw up when she looked at someone with a piece of ketchup on her mouth. And her mind was somehow giving her very confused messages about what that felt like. Like it was very traumatizing. And so if your child has very extreme gagging reflexes, we want to look at some other perhaps sensory neurological issues that might be causing that.
Assuming for a minute that we don't have an extreme case on our hands, how should we handle our child's refusal to eat certain foods?
Well, that's an excellent question, and having faced this many times in my work, I think that the best advice is to stay cool, because you don't want to have your behavior slip down to the level of their behavior, because children are willing to try extremes and screaming and hollering just to see if it'll work. So you want to keep your expectations high, but you also want to give them some choice about how they do it. So it may be important that they eat vegetables, but maybe they can choose which one they want to eat. It doesn't have to be spinach perhaps on Monday and broccoli on Tuesday. Perhaps they'll be more flexible if they have some choice within a realm, but don't get to choose whether or not they eat good foods.
So in other words, if you have a meal where you have two or three different vegetables available, they could choose one that they want to eat.
Right. They need to know that there are certain expectations for good eating, for their good health, but you don't have to be limited in how that looks. That's when we get into power struggles. You must eat this way.
Well, somebody we once talked to a long time ago, who I think was a nutritionist, said, "I consider it my job as a parent to put a nutritious meal on the table. It is my child's job to eat it."
I wish it worked that easily, but I think that you need many different techniques for many different kinds of children. So it's hard to give one kind of advice. As you know, having seven children between you, what worked for one doesn't work for the other.
Can we trust our children to select what their bodies need? Sometimes you read about studies that say if you put a whole bunch of things on the high chair tray, the child will, over a week's time, choose all the right foods.
My short answer to that would have to be no. Because there's just too much sugar out there to seduce them. And I think that if they had the cognitive skills at some point to overcome what their desires are. I think about myself, if I just let my body control, I'd eat ice cream for dinner probably three nights a week. But I realized if I did that, I wouldn't feel good perhaps the next day. In the long term, it's not good for my cardiovascular health. And so I make a cognitive decision to do something differently. But kids at two or three can't do that. And they can easily be seduced by salty and sweet and strong flavored foods. So if the diet has mostly healthy and natural foods in it, that might be possible so they can choose between peas or carrots. But if they're choosing between a snack food and a healthy food, that's not so easy.
So at some point, we lose control because we're no longer the ones giving them the choices.
That's right. We have a food industry that's giving them all kinds of interesting choices that it's hard to match up to. I mean, I give talks about certain brand names, which I don't want to mention, and all the parents laugh nervously because their children will only eat brand X. And there's a reason for that. It's hard to duplicate that, the chemicals and the flavors that are in there with regular foods, which are more subtle.
So kids will eat strawberries until they discover the strawberry gummy worms or whatever those things are.
Which really are strawberry, aren't they?
I don't know.
It's a strawberry pow.
I remember with my oldest, when he was in the enviable position of being an only child, we had, I think, a treasure hunt for a birthday party, and there were little candies wrapped up or something like that. And I remember the other kids would get the candy, and they would eat the candy. And my son didn't do that because he had never had candy. So it wasn't a big treat. Boy, was that short-lived.
That changed, right?
Right. In terms of introducing new foods, not necessarily candy, of course, what would you recommend as the best way?
Well, I think it should be normally a part of what you're doing. So, for example, many parents now go to different kinds of restaurants, but they find themselves ordering off the kiddie menu. So they're at a nice Thai restaurant, but they're ordering chicken fingers or hamburgers. And that's a perfect time to eat Thai food. I mean, my children started eating Thai food and Mexican food and Chinese food when they were in high chairs. And I didn't order what was provided for, quote, kid taste, because they will quickly adapt to that. I see that the most interestingly in kids who are adopted from overseas. When they first come here, they'll eat anything. You can put mud on their plates. They practically will eat anything. But a few visits to McDonald's and these other places, and they become picky just like the rest of our kids. So these are seductive tastes, and we want to keep introducing them to things that we're eating as part of the natural progression, not as something special we're doing.
I remember my oldest son, when he was very little, ate whatever we had for our meals. And we tried to eat a lot of variety, but we also eat a lot of Asian food just because we like that. I remember the grandparents were shocked that we were giving him things like artichokes and mushrooms and then things they had never seen before that were not recognizable when we were in restaurants. But he ate those things. You know, so, and it seemed if it was good for us, it must be okay for him.
But they're not different than we are. They're people.
Although it's interesting, I have a friend whose husband is from Thailand, and I was asking her whether the spicy Thai food that they generally have is something that they can give kids when they're little. And she said, no, in Thailand, they don't do that. They give them much milder stuff, and they introduce the spicier foods when they get older.
Well, I think that makes good sense. Mm-hmm. We don't want to introduce extremes, but our kids will let us know. We don't expect them to like everything. I don't like everything. So, you know, you would use your common sense, I think, for that.
What should a parent do about snacks?
Well, I think that studies are finding that snacks are now becoming a substantial part of what children eat. So they're almost what we would call mini meals. So I think we should treat them as little meals. So we're not looking at special snack foods, but we're looking at small meal foods. So a half a sandwich or fruit or vegetables or things that you would eat as a meal. With these days of soccer and baseball practice and karate and ballet, people are eating on the road. And a lot of times snack becomes the meal. So you should look at snacks as meals or small meals.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about picky eaters.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Kelly Dorfman about picky eaters. Now, what if our child fixates on certain foods? That tends to happen at certain ages and stages.
Boy, does it ever. I think that, Sandy, that depends on what the food is. The most interesting thing in 20 years of practice, I don't think I've ever seen a child that fixated on asparagus spears. It's always, you know, it's always fish crackers or allergy foods like pasta, wheat, and milk-based foods. So if it is a healthy food, I'm not concerned about it. But if it's a snack food or a junk food or a brand name food like French fries or chicken nuggets from a certain place, then I would be discouraging.
What if a child decides to be a vegetarian?
Well, that's a very good question that we're seeing more and more, especially, I would say, among middle school age girls. Many a middle school age girl has slunked into my office exhausted, who is a vegetarian, made a decision with their friends in a group that they were all going to stop eating animals, which is, as an ethical consideration, is a very, I think, legitimate concern. But it is also very easy to be a junk food vegetarian. And some of the worst nutrition cases I think I've seen in practice have been people who have become vegetarians but not done that with the extra information and the extra food preparation you need to do that. So the girls typically end up eating bagels and apples and yogurt, and that's pretty much their diet. And it's a diet that leaves them tired and fatigued and sometimes groggy and fuzzy thinking. So we have to be more conscious about how we're going to get in vitamin B12 if you're a strict vegetarian, which would mean no dairy products. But if you're eating eggs and fish, if you're a modified vegetarian, it's a little bit easier. I think that when you're making a decision not to eat animals, you also have to make a decision to become friendly to legumes and dark green vegetables, which is a tougher one.
How do you convince children to do that?
They need to know that that needs to go together, that in making a decision to make be a vegetarian for health reasons and for reasons to sustain the earth possibly, that you also are trying to make better choices in how you're living. And it's not just a matter of not eating meat, but how are you going to support your body better? And so as a philosophical decision, it's not such a narrow decision. I think they tend to look at it as it's just not eating meat. And it's actually much more than that.
Would you say it's then a parent's responsibility to offer these new items that this child might not have eaten before?
Absolutely. Rather than say, oh, my goodness, you've become a vegetarian, it might be more productive to say, oh, that's a very interesting decision. Do you know that you will have to consider these nutrients and perhaps you're going to be more interested in cooking and learning how to prepare foods because it's harder to get these foods out? And here's a nice bean recipe and lentil soup is delicious. And those are different ways we can introduce the concept.
How can we best evaluate whether our child is eating a nutritional diet?
Oh, I like that question a lot. And I get this question a lot, and short of many thousands of dollars of sophisticated blood test, I think the simplest, cheapest way as a parent you can do it is eat the diet yourself and see how you feel. And I say that often when I give talks, and what I get is a gasp because the very thought of eating what their child is eating to a parent often is horrifying. And if that's the case, you can bet your bottom dollar that the diet's not in good shape. So if the thought of eating your child's diet or what your child eats in a day is horrifying to you, I think that that is cause for concern. And if you're not sure, you could sit down and try eating it for a while and see how you feel. Sometimes kids don't see the relationship between what they're eating and how they feel, but parents are more tuned into that and can do that trial themselves.
When kids are really picky eaters and they go off to school to have lunch at school, how can we affect what they're eating for lunch? Do you think that that's a time we really need to pack their lunches for them to make sure that they're eating healthfully?
Gee, Linda, I was hoping you could answer that question for me.
I don't know the answer.
There isn't an easy answer for that. I think that packing lunch is a good alternative, but most kids switch and trade their lunches. And so it's education and setting an example. And continue to do that. And you know what? You'll lose some of those battles. My kids can't wait to get to school and get foods that they don't see in my house. And I think some of that's going to happen and is part of life.
One of my kids wrote a college application essay on the trading of food in the lunchroom and how he got what he wanted dessert-wise all through high school. I mean, I didn't know this was going on. But when he wrote this essay, we all laughed. And he said, well, that's just what we did. That's how I got those cookies. And that's how, you know, I gave away the granola bars.
Well, it's interesting because my son announced he's 14 now. When he was in kindergarten, that when he grew up, he was going to eat at McDonald's every single night. And I realized I'd gone too far. And then I would take him there for a few times. And he actually quickly got tired of it, which was, I thought, was interesting.
Isn't that interesting? Well, we had an issue in our house because a long time ago, I read a study about rats being fed white bread, you know, enriched white bread and dying of malnutrition and all this stuff. So I thought, that's the end of white bread in my house. So my fourth one grew up with no white bread in the house. And when he goes over to someone's house, that's the first thing he asks for because it's a very big treat.
Yeah.
I had a house where nobody would eat the bread when I got rid of the white bread. My husband was the first leader. He wouldn't eat any kind of bread that was brown or slightly brown, except pumpernickel. But he wouldn't eat whole wheat bread or any of the bread with various grains. And, of course, then none of my kids would. So we didn't have bread for a while. We had other interesting things like English muffins and different kinds of rolls and things that they didn't realize. But it was a tough switch.
I think that's a good point. But it's also, you make the point, I think, that you didn't lower your expectations or kind of sell out and buy only squishy white bread just because your children had some difficulty with it. You held on to the standards you felt defined good health in a pleasant way, and they found other ways to work with that.
And there are lots of choices. We're so lucky today,
right,
because we don't have to stop and bake everything or make everything from scratch. If we shop wisely, we can find all kinds of variety. But finding what a picky child likes isn't always the easiest thing either.
Hmm.
How important is parental role modeling in connection with eating? Speaking of my husband and the brown bread.
Yeah, I think I can safely say it's everything. And I'm astonished how many times people drag children into my practice to teach them to do things they can't do themselves. They'll tell me, I don't eat vegetables or fruit either, but my child should. And it's a really difficult position to be in because you literally can't teach the children to do that if their parents aren't doing it. So I often have to stop the consultation in a very awkward way, put the child aside, and deal with the parents. And I actually find the kids are much easier to deal with in many cases than the parents. The parents are the ones who have long emotional issues tied in with food. And sometimes they project those onto their children. So role modeling becomes very important. And kids are excruciatingly careful about how they look at that. I mean, they don't take any guff from us. I mean, if we're not very honest about it, they hold us to that. And perhaps they should.
I think that's true with just about everything in parenting. They know when we're not being honest.
Yeah.
But it is a big deal. I think parents are very invested in how they've always eaten.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think your job must be really tough when you have to switch the parent in order to get the child to eat healthfully.
It's the old bait and switch.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about picky eaters.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Kelly Dorfman about picky eaters.
How can we involve our children in meal planning or preparation? I was thinking about this the other day because I have a child who announced he was a vegetarian a couple of years ago. And he has been much more involved in meal preparation for himself these days, partially, I think, because of that.
Oh, and I think that's a very good decision to make with vegetarianism, as we talked about before. I believe that you need to start early. It's very difficult usually to get kids started in meal preparation at 9 or 10, but they're thrilled to help at 3 or 4. I don't think I've ever met a 4-year-old who wasn't dying to get their hands on a carrot peeler or push some of those buttons on those kitchen appliances. And so that's the opening time when they're 3, 4, and 5. They're really interested in what goes on in life and how things are done. And that's the time to catch them if you can and to have them do what they can. And I found myself, actually, much to my chagrin, handing a paring knife to my 5-year-old because she wanted to cut off the tops of beans. And at first I thought perhaps this wasn't a good idea, but the Montessori school that I knew down the street was doing that, and the kids loved to help out. So I just sat there like a hawk watching her carefully, and she was thrilled. To this day, she's 8. I mean, give her a paring knife and she'll do almost anything. Of course, this requires supervision, but the other thing that I think is very important is that you want to have them help you at times when you're not in a hurry, because it's going to take longer with them. And if you think it's going to be more efficient in the short run, it is not. Only in the long run. So you want to have plenty of time because it takes them much longer and there will be a bigger mess.
Do you think it helps kids who are very picky about what they eat if they help with the planning and the preparation? Or are those the ones that say, I don't want to be bothered?
I keep hoping it's going to help, and it sometimes does, but you can't depend on it. I mean, if you think they're going to eat better because they're helping out, it doesn't always work that way. I've seen kids prepare beautiful meals and sit down and refuse to eat any of it. They can sometimes separate out those two, I don't know if it's feelings or those two things that are happening, the preparation versus the eating. So you can certainly try it, but it's not a guarantee.
one of the things that I've always had trouble with is figuring out what a portion is. We talk about, you know, children needing to eat so much of this and so much of that, and nobody ever sort of explains how much an actual portion is. What are appropriate portions to serve a child?
Children range from age 2, which is a small, tiny portion, to 12, many of which are bigger than we are as parents, or especially as mothers, perhaps. So I don't know that there's an answer for that. I suggest small, whatever that means to you, and then give them more. You can always ask for more, and you can also at the same time then train them to listen to their own hunger versus the portion, which many adults with weight problems really struggle with because they have this idea of portion which is somehow distorted in their head, or if it's on the plate, they have to finish it. So if you start with small portions and allow the children to add to that due to their hunger versus some kind of artificial restraint we put on, this is a portion or this is how much dinner you need to eat, and sort of be comfortable muddling along with that, I think that's the best way to do it.
Is there some kind of guide like the size of your hand or something? I heard that someplace.
Well, there are guides like that in terms of what 4 ounces equals, or, you know, the size of your fist, you know, is might be 4 ounces or a half a cup. So from that perspective, but this question still remains, is a half a cup the right portion size, or is that fist size the right size? And you don't know until you really get to know your child and have them learn their own hunger and what that is.
It occurs to me, talking about portion sizes, do you see children who are picky eaters sometimes become overweight as opposed to maybe underweight?
Absolutely. And I think that's what I'm talking about. It's funny you ask about portion size and you're thinking about weight control in some instances, but that can be underweight or overweight.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a different size of the same coin. And in restaurants, the portions tend to be overly large. Mm-hmm. And because obesity is a huge problem in children, picky eating does not mean thinness necessarily.
Mm-hmm. What do we do when we take our children and ourselves to a restaurant where the portions are ridiculous? How do we deal with that, especially if you're seeing that in front of you?
Well, that's something I think we have to look at ourselves first before we look at our children and order from the appetizer part of the menu. You don't have to order a main course. Do you want to split? You know, when you have children, you're constantly splitting your meals anyway. So you can say, we know this restaurant gives big portions. You know, maybe you want to split the pasta dish versus ordering it all by yourself. You can wrap things up. Show them that you can eat till you're full and then wrap them up and take them home and eat them for breakfast.
I think it's a big lesson also to know that you can order from anywhere on a menu and that you can say, I'm sorry, I can't have it broiled in butter. Could you broil it without butter? If you say in a restaurant, I'm allergic to that, well, they're not going to give it to you. But you want the child to eat what's healthful. I have one who won't eat anything that has butter or margarine mm-hmm. or anything like that on it. He's basically healthy and he eats a wise diet. I think you mentioned learning to order from the appetizers or from the salads. That's very important for kids to know it's okay to do that for your meal.
Right, and that's about their size when they're 7 or 8 anyway at many restaurants if they don't want to share what you're getting. And wrapping up is a great thing. I love dinner foods for breakfast. I think that dinner foods make the best breakfast foods. And so why not wrap up a half a sandwich or a half a portion?
Great idea.
Yeah.
Actually, my mother-in-law taught us how to do that because she does it at the beginning of her meal so that already off the plate is the part that she's not going to be eating, which is kind of comforting. Speaking of comforting, do you have some numbers or some information for parents who need to get more information on picky eating or eating habits or appropriate nutrition?
Well, I am the co-founder of a registry for children with developmental delays. It's called the Developmental Delay Resource. And they are online at www.devdelay.org.
Can you say that again?
Sure. www.devdelay.org. That's O-R-G. Or they can be called at 301-652-2263. Again, that's 301-652-2263.
And what can parents get when they get in touch with you?
Well, this would not be for a typical picky eater, but for one that has extreme behaviors, or if there are speech and language delays or attentional problems or pervasive developmental disorder or autism, which complicates picky eating. A vast majority of children with developmental delays tend to have picky eating problems or strange dietary habits. And for those parents, that would be a great resource.
What about parents who are just battling the picky eater business, the nutritional issues? Where should they go for help?
I think that they should start looking at what they're doing themselves. and the structure of their family. There are plenty of interesting books out there that you can run out, I suppose, and look at, but they all kind of have a certain philosophy which you may or may not agree with. So I think that's a good time to look at your own philosophy. You know, do we have a dinner time? It's tough to find, you know, if there's not a place you can depend on or a time you can depend on to eat, it can be difficult for children. They like routine. So I think the first place to look at is, what am I eating? What am I doing?
Well, you have certainly been somebody we could all depend on, and we really, really thank you, Kelly Dorfman, for coming in and giving us all this important information.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller today will be an autographed copy of our new book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. That's 1-800-791-8573. We look forward to hearing from you. We'd like to send you Parents as Mentors. To order tapes of any show, send $5 as the check or money order to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. That's P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., zip code 20015.
You can also reach Parents Perspective through your local station or by email to parentsper, that's P-A-R-E-N-T-S-P-E-R, at AOL.com. Or again, call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. To learn more about us and our book, Parents as Mentors, visit our website through our shortcut address, i.am/parentsperspective. It's all one word, i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.